On Thursday, a few days ago, President Obama lectured to the delegates at the United Nations General Assembly, saying, "Each of us must choose a path of peace. Of course, that responsibility begins with the parties themselves, who must answer the call of history." Earlier this month at the White House, I was struck by the words of both the Israeli and Palestinian leaders. Prime Minister Netanyahu said, "I came here today to find a historic compromise that will enable both people to live in peace, security, and dignity." And President Abbas said, "We will spare no effort and we will work diligently and tirelessly to ensure these negotiations achieve their cause." Now, land has always been a big issue, not only in politics, but in the Bible as well, because it's full of politics all over. When Israel started out as God's people, they tell the story of themselves to be a wandering people. In Deuteronomy, we learn that my father was a wandering Aramean. That's what God's people are. They pitch their tent wherever God leads them. Until history evolved and they turned into a state, a nation, they secured the borders, and they've been under attack forever. Philistines came from the sea. And you may remember that King David killed thousands of them, and they've been a thorn in Israel's flesh forever. And they settled pretty much around King David's time what is now known as the Gaza Strip. They basically built it there. Now in 1948, Britain gave permission for the establishment of a Jewish state in its territory, basically reversing what has tortured God's people for centuries, the diaspora. Israel lost their land around 135 after Christ. They've been homeless for 1800 years, pretty much. That was reversed in 1948. A few years later, in 1964, the Arab League came up with what they called the Palestinian people. Unheard of before, but all of a sudden in 1964, here they were. And they consisted basically of all the members of the Arab League, and they were loosely based on the biblical idea of the Philistines, which fought King David. Yes, Israel has been under attack from the very beginning, even in their contemporary statehood. That's the history of God's people. Not having a home, and once you have one, it's not secure. That's where God's people belong. There is no security for God's people. There is no peace and rest according to our terms. Let's look at the other side of the ocean. Today we commemorate American Indian Ministry Sunday. And looking at Native Americans, we've often had that image of the noble savage that was the people in accord with nature. We basically picture them as tree huggers. Not true. They fought wars. They extincted people after people. They extincted species of animals. They were people just like us. They fought their wars. They killed their peers. They were crazy just like us. When the white man came over, it wasn't just the spirit of, "Hey, we'll kick you out." But who was it that came over? It was the burdened, was the persecuted, was those that were fleeing starvation and persecution back in Europe. They were running away. They weren't strong. They were weak. They felt like entering the promised land almost the way Israel did when they were first brought up out of Egypt. Those poor enslaved people running away from oppression and starvation, looking for a new hope. The truth of the matter is, superior weapons and equipment let them conquer the promised land in only a matter of decades. The poor, weak, became the strong, and the oppressors, actually. That's the two stories we have to hear. God's wandering people being under attack for all of its history, and the white man being weak in Europe, coming to America, erasing nations from the planet Earth. Now, who are we to identify with in all this? We're the good people. Who do we want to be telling the stories? Who do we want to identify with in Israel? Obviously, we call ourselves God's people. So our stand needs to be with God's people. We need to stand with Israel in their struggle. We will not be able to solve it. God has always made sure that his people depend on him and on him alone. We cannot make peace for Israel. God will protect them in their struggle. But we can't end it in our terms. Now, who are we to identify with in 17th century Europe? God's people that have been under attack. In this case, they have been under attack ever since they dared opposing tyranny or fled from hunger. The pilgrims that fled England and landed near Plymouth Rock in 1620, what they brought with them became later known as the United Church of Christ. That is where we come from, the weak ones that were after us. We ran away looking for peace. That's who we are to identify with in the 17th century. Now, who are we to identify with in the 19th century during the Native American genocides? God's people that have been under attack forever, the weak ones. We learned that. The weak ones like Israel that has been under attack forever. The weak ones like European minorities that fled oppression and hunger. The weak ones. In this case, Native Americans that are victimized by superior power. The same story, told over and over again. Different identifications necessary for us to make a sense out of it all. Paul recalls how God defines his grace. My grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness. That is where Christians belong, where weakness is. Where God's people are under attack, where people are forced out of their countries. That's where God's grace and power belong. In various statements, our tradition has apologized for what their forefathers did. Yes, the early Congregationalists weren't nice to their Native American peers. We apologize for that over and over again, and we can do that again today. We can't undo it. It's been done to us back then. We just passed it on, which we had no right to do. God's people are under attack forever. Time warp back to Jeremiah's time. It's 587 before Christ, and Babylon is pounding on the door of Jerusalem again. 10 years earlier, they had disciplined the rebellious Israel with a measure of destruction and had carried off some of its people. But now Israel is getting overly confident again, probably because they had Egypt back in them. That's how you do it. I mean, hey, we got the big boys in our back. Jeremiah is a prophet that tells his people to give up hope. That's a good preacher, huh? There's no hope for you. Surrender. They wouldn't listen. But at this point, he tries something different. He buys a piece of land. Buying real estate means confidence in the future. So he said, even though we are being kicked out pretty soon, again, there is hope in the long run. That is why he buys a piece of property, and that is a sign of hope in a desolate situation. If only we could keep that hope alive in our times, especially in the reservations out there. They once were great nations, now they're confined to their little pieces of land, probably the size that Jeremiah bought back there. Let's give hope to the reservations that they can be restored to great nations, because it's happened before. Israel has been restored again and again. It can happen. God can make it happen. Now, what's our role in this? I mean, the big prophet of old days, all these people, the big history and politics. What am I supposed to do about all that? We hear about one person. Maybe you wouldn't even remember his name. But in today's passage, we heard about Jeremiah's secretary, his name being Baruch. And his job is to keep records. Records of hope. Jeremiah orders him to keep the sealed deeds of the purchase and put them in a vessel and keep them contained and safe as a symbol of hope. Now, I could have brought you today an earthen jar with maybe a piece of paper in it that has some inspirational thoughts on it or so. And I could hand that to you as a sign of hope. You can put it by your fireplace, with your nightstand, wherever you need hope. I chose not to do that. We could also set out on an excursion to the Holy Land and go find the original vessels containing the signed deeds. Because we need proof. Is hope real? Did Jeremiah really sign that thing? I got proof enough. You're here this morning. You came here, and there must be a reason for that. There must be a reason for that, and that reason can only be that you have at least a grasp of the idea that there might be a reason for hope. If there weren't, you might as well have stayed in bed. There is a reason for hope, and you are the vessels. We are the baruchs. We are the containers of hope in this world. Jeremiah says it right in his book, only a few verses before our passage starts. Jeremiah reports God's promise to his people. We don't need an earth jar. We are the vessel of hope. And that sounds like this. I will put my law within them, and I will write it on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. That's where hope needs to be, in our hearts. That is where God puts it. That is the hope that brings forth peace in our world. Amen.